You are listening to a truly epic edition of Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. This week on the show, we are so excited to talk about Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman. Finally, after all these years, this groundbreaking superhero gets her time to shine on screen. But is there more to this film than simply another superhero actioner? Is there a larger message for our culture? We discuss that and much more with our own team of women in the Justice League, actor Amanda James Smith and Pastor Judith McCartney. So grab your bulletproof bracelets and your lasso of truth, because we're going to dive right in. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to the podcast. We are super excited to have you here and to talk about Wonder Woman, Patty Jenkins' reboot of the, well, reinvention, I guess, of famed superhero from the DC Universe. This week for our show, we've assembled our own team of Wonder Women.
That's us.
Amanda, Jane Smith, and Judith McCartney. Welcome, ladies.
It's Hello.
Hi, good to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
We're really excited to have you here to talk about this particular film. For those people that are not familiar with Wonder Woman, she is one of the, well, I guess I've heard the term Holy Trinity of the DC Universe with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, but she has never had her own movie until now. I think that the character is roughly 60 years old. I'm just pulling that number out of the air. 75, there it is. Okay. Yeah, because Batman has just celebrated 75 a year or two ago, and Superman was close behind it. And we have her first telling on screen, directed by Patty Jenkins, written by William Marston. Tells the story of Diana, the princess of the Amazons, who is trained to be an unconquerable warrior in the time of World War I as she meets Captain Steve Trevor. She decides to leave her home and enter a battle that she was unaware of at the time, but there was much larger things at stake. And let's just ask the easy question, ladies. What did you think of Wonder Woman?
You know what? I kind of felt like it's about time. It's about time to have sort of a character out there that is an equal pairing with some of the other characters out there, like Batman and Superman and some of the other characters out there. I thought it was time. And it was a great, fun, innovative movie. I loved it.
For sure.
I know it seems like an easy question, but to ask me if I liked it is actually a very loaded question, because I agree with Judith that there's the political, passionate perspective on Wonder Woman finally being made versus what I think of just going to see a movie, a standalone movie on its own. And I'm having a hard time separating those two because, you know, it's a long movie. I'm not a huge fan of summer blockbusters. It was a little gassy at times, you know. It was so if I were to pick it apart technically, I wouldn't say it was incredible. It was award-winning. It was not. But I'm too excited by the fact that this was finally made and what it represents that I absolutely enjoyed it from that perspective.
Yeah. So it is a loaded question because it brings up a lot of issues for women and empowerment and what the movie really said, you know, about that with some of the other issues sort of, you know, intertwined and stuff. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would agree with you both. You know, being a man, I don't know how to answer this.
Very carefully.
Very, very carefully. No, the truth is, I thought it was absolutely, I love the phrase about time. It was about time. I don't know why that barrier has been there. There's been this perception for decades that female-led films don't make money, especially action movies. The boys don't want to go to see Wonder Woman. You know, they want to go see Batman, Superman, any male. They want to see somebody they can emulate. This is the thing you've heard for years.
Right.
But there's never been an issue for me.
But recently, talking to a lot of males about this movie, they all enjoyed it. I didn't dig further to find out why they enjoyed the movie, but a lot of them actually expressed that it was a pretty solid movie.
Well, I think if you look at, I mean, aesthetically, it's totally on par with all the other DC action superhero films. It's beautiful, you know, the cinematography, but it's beautiful in that it's still, it's gritty, it's dark, just like a Batman movie would be. The score, you know, heavy guitar.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. She's got like an amazing theme. Whether or not it's male or female, we're talking generalities right now because mm-hmm. women can love heavy guitar sounds
yeah. Absolutely.
Too. But I don't feel like it made any kind of distinct aesthetic shift to go, oh, now this is a female superhero movie. It's just, it's another superhero movie.
Yeah.
Mm. It is amazing that it took this long to make Wonder Woman, but strangely, I'm so glad they made it now and not any sooner.
Mm.
But I'm still scratching my head because I keep thinking of Angelina Jolie in Tomb Raider. And she was fantastic. And it was based on a video game. And she kicked butt throughout the whole movie. And it was all centered around her. And that, I don't remember the date of that movie, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah it's been quite a while. I'm curious.
And it didn't break any ceiling. It didn't open the floodgates.
No, it didn't.
In fact, it was an anomaly. And then we had to wait.
Yeah.
And wait through Iron Man and Batman and Superman and another Batman and Thor.
I agree.
And, you know, and like tentatively Marvel or DC would introduce like a Black Widow here or, you know, another female there that we're supporting. But no one ever decided, let's make a female superhero film where the story is completely centered around her. I have no idea.
Why. Amanda, I think it's reflective of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we weren't ready to launch into something bigger. I kind of feel like the floodgates weren't open because we weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
Angelina Jolie and her character was ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if the landscape was ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that era when my daughter was young and she loved it. Not just because it was a fascinating movie, but because she had a role model that was strong, that could kick and fly all over the place.
Which movie? Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider.
Which was 2001. I just looked it up.
2001. Yeah. And at the time, okay, my daughter was about 3 years old, but she was engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter looks like a girly girl on the outside, but she likes the strength and power of that character.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. See, I agree with you both on that. And I remember Tomb Raider, and I thought it was a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that scene where she's fighting off all the guys and she's on the ropes, so that it's a really, really well done scene.
Mm-hmm.
I still get the feeling that when that came out, though, and I could be wrong, but it was the Tomb Raider games were still objectified by male culture,
yes.
still much, and
yes.
the you know the Lara Croft imagery in that it's so different, or is it? See, I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can see some of her skin, but mostly she's covered by like cool sort of army.
Army fatigue, it's true.
Fatigue. But it is still showing off her figure. But look, if we're going to go into that conversation, Gal Gadot
is a supermodel.
And they don't hold anything back in terms of showing flesh and skin because, you know, she originates from an island of goddesses or demigoddesses. And there was never, I don't think there was never an idea with William Marston, the writer, or then now with Patty Jenkins, to try and cover up that sensuality, sexuality, femininity is going to be part of the Wonder Woman character.
Hmm.
And that shouldn't slow things down at all, or it shouldn't bring into our focus, oh, she's just being objectified.
Hmm.
In fact, in the movie, she's like, how do you move in this? How do you fight in
this?
True. You know,
well,
it's not because I want to like catch the attention of men. It's because I want to function properly. I want to move.
Oh,
well.
Sure. Yeah.
But okay. So just to recap, just to close up the discussion about Tomb Raider, then I think probably what you're thinking, Steve, is the fact that the Tomb Raider character, Lara Croft, didn't seem to have a lot of empathy or compassion. She was more written in the way, our male definition of an action hero is, which is very stoic, and I don't take a lot of guff from anyone, and I'll just, you know, kick butt and keep on going, almost like a bit of an automaton machine. And the fundamental difference with Wonder Woman is that she stands for justice, peace, love, and she does have compassion. Yes, she can kick butt, but more importantly, is that she expresses and exudes love, which is what William Marston always intended with Wonder Woman.
I really like that thought. I think we should launch into a different conversation on that one. I was thinking about the issue of equality and equity, and there's a significant difference. And right now we have a landscape that's really talking about equality and equity. And equality is where women are given the same thing because we're asking for it. In a way, that's kind of the way I look at equality. Mm. But then when I take a look at equity, I think to myself, there's a fairness in identifying the importance of one's expertise, no matter what gender, no matter what age. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're starting to identify the uniqueness of equality and equity. And I sort of had a disconnect in the movie, while watching the movie, about the representation of her femaleness and also her strength. Because I thought, shouldn't it be represented more male? Mm. But I like what you said. They didn't get rid of that fact that she actually is genuine. She has that sixth sense. Mm-hmm. And she can multitask and she can do all those things. Mm-hmm. But she led in her expertise. So it's a unique conversation to take a look at equity and equality in this landscape. And I really thought that it was a fair representation of equity because there was a shared leadership there, you know, in the movie. If you saw it, you know, at first they didn't know what to do with her. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? You're going to take the lead on this? And then they saw she's an expert. Mm-hmm. We'll let her go. Mm-hmm. But then the other guys had an expertise as well, of which they shared. And it was sort of a nice little dance on the screen.
Sure.
I don't want to go back to Tomb Raider, but when you look at, we're in a place of culture now where people are demanding to have stories told that represent them in a in a way that properly represents them. There's there's a genuine seeking of that. So next year, for example, Marvel's coming out with Black Panther, which is the first, well, not the first, because there have been others, but is being seen as a big step forward as an African-American superhero taking the stage that isn't just another white male. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's, I think actually in the movie, one of the things that they say, because she's talking with the team, she's talking with the team that goes with her. I want to make sure I get the guy. Who is the guy's name?
Samir. It was Samir.
It was Samir. And Samir says, I couldn't do anything else. I was the wrong color or something. So you've got this interesting group because it's common in any action film to form a group of experts.
Yes.
But in this film, they're not even experts. They're just to sort of come together around the same cause. Mm-hmm. And there's this interesting thing about, you know, my story needs to be told, but I have been prevented of doing that.
Roadblocked, yes.
So now one of the things about this particular film, though, I want to talk about this too, is Patty Jenkins, of course, directing it, which was one of the things that people have felt was really important to the story, was to have a female direct the film. Yeah. You see the same thing in a case with Black Panther, with Ryan Coogler is directing that, an African-American male. I was wondering, what do you think about the idea of representation and telling your own story? Why is that important?
I think storytelling links all of us, and we each have a story to tell, and it actually allows us to lean into whatever challenge or joy we have in our life. Some people are hard about leaning into, you know, a challenge in their life or a topic that's challenging. Mm. But I think storytelling gives us that, I don't know, that grace, that softness to lean into it. Mm. I don't know. I really think it's important. Mm.
I think it was Viola Davis a couple of years ago received an award. And remember, she said,
the speech.
She said, we can't be what we can't see. And it just, that's it. Like, why it's important that stories are told, stories of minorities, stories of oppressed peoples, stories of a gender that has, you know, come second. Mm. We can't be what we can't see. So it's time that we see all kinds of different stories where all different groups are represented authentically, not just in a stereotypical manner, because that's how it's always should have been. That's, we need to see on screen what is already in the world.
Yeah.
And then personally, so out of the macro into the micro, growing up female, there's a psychology when you're born, when I was born and I ran around and had fun, I believed I was capable of anything. Mm. And slowly over time, the signals, sometimes consciously, sometimes subconsciously, were sent to me through movies and TV shows and even books and song lyrics that I would be the support to the male hero. But it was only through that messaging that I got quiet about my own strength and my own desire to shine. I never would have gotten quiet had it not been for, you know, culture and media sort of putting that on me. Mm. So how wonderful now that girls can grow up. And just as important that boys alongside the girls see women on screen in these roles.
Right.
So that it never occurs to them to adopt a more oppressive stance, even if they don't know they're doing it automatically.
Right.
So, yeah, it's time to show and be seen so that we can be.
I love that.
And I wanted to, because, Judith, you brought up your definition of equity and equality, equality being that, you know, people are sort of forcing, pushing, or demanding, breaking through in their story. And let's say in the context of Wonder Woman, it was a, you know, a real push in the last 12, 18 months for female better representation on screen and behind the screen.
Right.
You know, there's things like the Bechdel test and, you know, that have really tried to soberingly, statistically break down how women are so poorly represented on screen. And they had this wonderful charting system where they showed, like, in Disney movies, even if the script is centered around the female character, there's still the majority of lines are given to the male characters.
Yeah.
Or the classic Bechdel test is, do you have two female actors on screen that have names, so not just waitress or drunk girl or party girl, they're named characters that talk about something other than a man in a scene, and a staggering amount of movies do not pass this test.
Yeah.
Okay.
So pushing, so your definition equality is pushing, and I think that it's appropriate that it's happening now after this sort of like
we want more. Yeah, we want more than equality.
Right.
But we want equity, right?
But I think we get to equity through the demands of equality.
I do. I agree.
That is how, so you push, 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 and maybe the naysayers and people say, like, boy, they're a loud bunch. Boy, they're a rowdy bunch. Yeah. Why can't they just be happy to, you know, have, take this bit of money and take this little film? So you push, 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 and you sound kind of loud and you sound kind of abrasive, but once you're there and everyone sits in the screen and sees Gal Gadot kicking butt and they go, oh, and more importantly than just the audience reaction, is the producers getting the ticket sales and looking at their charts and going, boy, we just made more money than we did on Man of Steel.
They didn't make more money, but they've got far better ratings, and they're going to make more money.
They made more money than one of the DC, the recent DC blockbusters.
No, on opening weekend, no. It's actually, this is a funny thing. It's interesting. It was funny because somebody posted a lineup. There's, of course, it's been all over the internet that Wonder Woman is now single-handedly saving the DC universe. Because everybody, and actually there's a picture, there's a graphic online of Wonder Woman charging with Superman on one shoulder and Batman on the other, and all it says is, I got this. But this is one of the things I said. It's a fascinating chart. Somebody charted, I think, Batman versus Superman, 166 million opening weekend. And then it went, it was like 100, it, basically the lowest, I think, was 120 or something was Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, yeah.
But the interesting thing is, all of, like, this has got a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, like, sort of right now the gold standard of of ratings. You know, that's sort of the, this is a good movie. But the one thing that people are saying is, $100 million is a spectacular opening weekend. It's on par with the first Iron Man.
That's what it was.
That's what it sold.
Yeah. Okay.
But the other thing is the ratings are much higher.
Make.
Oh, they'll have it all back by next weekend. It's like that's the thing. They're saying the longevity for this, because Batman and Superman had 166 million the opening weekend,
and then
it dropped like 75% the next week because everybody said how bad it was.
Ratings
are so high, an A plus or an A cinema score or something, so the audiences are enjoying it. So they're saying this one is a one's a gold mine, and for the it's going to own the next 5 weeks. Probably not, maybe not at number one, because there'll be other ones coming out, but it's it's going to be big.
Well, that's good. I mean, if I could just, for 1 minute, despite how proud I am as a woman I'm so friggin' sick of superhero movies. I could care less if DC makes back their money, but I want this movie is, it's a political statement too. Yeah. So I want everyone to go out and see it. I want them to spend the $13 or $15. Just cough it up, go see it, because it symbolizes a shift in Hollywood, yeah. big mm-hmm. movies, but just superhero movies in general need to just go away. Just take a nap.
It needs a little
take
bit of a
nap.
Break.
Yeah. yeah.
I do like the message though, right? It's great to have this movie out. And when I sat there, I really had to think, is this a movie of empowerment or does this movie sort of just show us how disempowered women have been, you know,
yeah.
because there were a lot of little scenes showing us that. Well, you know, the dress up scene mm-hmm. with, okay, I can't move. It's itchy. It's all this. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you have the German.
Oh, the villain.
Dr. Poison.
Yes.
Dr. Poison.
Yeah. Dr. Poison. And I thought to myself, yeah, I'm real glad that they put all those symbols in there because mm-hmm. like in history, they've taken women out of the equation for classical music, art, medicine, all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they put it back in. And I wonder if it's more of a launching pad, mm-hmm. you know, for empowerment. I'm not sure. I'm kind of thinking there might be a sequel.
Oh, yeah, so, they've confirmed it.
And sure, I think that message yeah. will be even more clear.
Yeah.
I wonder if being a period piece helps as well.
Yes.
Because
I
being
think
in 1930s.
Yeah, they had to show the contrast.
Yeah.
They had to show, right, like the fish out of water when she leaves Thymus Scara and comes to what is then like modern civilized society.
Yes.
It was great to show that contrast of how there was such stark sexism and choosing to base Wonder Woman in World War I instead of World War II, which is more the comic books. But Patty and the writers took the film to World War I, meant that it was around the time of suffragettes happening.
Yeah.
So
it's true.
I think that was a really great, you know, you could quickly get the sense of how backwards the rest of the world was.
Yeah.
And then that contrast, that opposite, helped to launch the Wonder Woman character so much further.
Yeah,
so you got
too.
Those highs and lows of like, wow, this is how women are really dealing with life right now. Well, here I'm about to like kick butt on this no man's land battlefield where everyone is like, not even in their wildest dreams would they have ever imagined this could happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things we've talked a little bit about here, too, is we've talked a lot about how I think it's Gal Gadot. I think there's actually
Gadot.
I think they say the T. But how she's portrayed. What about the relationship with Chris Pine, with Steve Trevor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a really interesting balance there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that relationship between the male and female leads. And he is a lead.
Mm-hmm.
He's not,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's not called Steve Trevor. It's definitely called Wonder Woman. But he is as much in the film in many ways as she is. What do you think about that relationship?
Well, there was some good humor in it because as she transitioned from a female-dominated, you know, culture and an empowered culture, then she, you know, she sees him naked.
Mm.
You know, well, sort of. He's covering up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite humorous where, you know, he has to affirm his, you know, his, I guess, power, his... I don't know. I'm above average.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He says that.
So I felt, yeah, okay. So there's
I body doubled for him. Not
yes,
many
I know
that.
You did.
No.
So I don't know. That's the only thought that comes to mind. Maybe if Amanda, you know, had a comment regarding question.
I love Chris Pine.
Yeah.
I'm a big, big fan of Chris Pine.
They had a great relationship on screen.
Yeah, I have a soft spot there for Chris. And he's hilarious. And clearly he's the comic relief. And he also brings a lot of weight. You know, like Gal, I've never seen her act before, but she's been in stuff before. But she doesn't bring the weight that a more classically trained actor does. So fine, fair enough. You bring a real seasoned actor who is bankable, and he's great. Like, he's Captain Kirk. Come on.
Yeah.
I think that I'm okay with Hollywood taking baby steps and that they had to put a male counterpart to Wonder Woman's female, and they did share a lot of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there will be a movie soon where Wonder Woman's witty bantering partner can be another female, because that certainly happens many times in male superhero films where there's a bromance on screen, and that's just as bankable, and we don't have an issue with the fact that we don't see a female that often. But I'm okay with the fact that they took baby steps, and that in this movie there was a whole lot of Chris Pine in it.
I mean, maybe that role takes on with Etta, which I did some looking, and apparently I didn't realize that Etta was actually her sidekick in the comics. Was Wonder Woman's sidekick was Etta, whereas here she sort of plays the foil or secretary, I guess, to Chris Pine.
Right.
So it's possible.
So funny too.
I loved her.
Yeah, she did a great job. Yeah, she did a really good
amazing.
Job.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting too. One of the things I liked about the relationship between Trevor and Diana was that Diana didn't necessarily didn't need him to run the show, but I didn't think he was minimized either. I don't mean like he needed more screen. I don't mean like that. This is not his show. But for example, in say one of the criticisms I heard over say the new Mad Max one, which I love, Fury Road. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen Fury Road, my gosh. Because Furiosa, Charlize Theron in that movie, she owns the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Mad Max, but it's really her movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that particular film, it's interesting because there are scenes where, you know, Max can't shoot the rifle. So she just takes it and does it perfectly. And, and Max is almost, he's like almost pointless in his own movie. But I thought it was interesting because the two of them actually have – I thought that they had a banter that was on par with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, for example, at the climax of the film – I'm not talking about Steve Trevor, you know, sacrificing himself. I'm talking about when they're talking in the tower. And there's this interesting moment where Steve is trying to help her understand a world she doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But she is also helping him frame – the world he does know, reframe it, because he says to her something like, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but he's talking about there's this big question of whether or not Ares really exists, and he's saying, well, this is just sort of how the world is. You don't know what the world is like, and she says, yeah, but she gives him a vision of something much bigger.
Right.
And it wasn't that one was an idiot and one was smarter.
Mm-hmm.
It was that they were both sort of – I felt it was two people coming together and sort of helping develop that conversation together.
It was more of a coming together, yeah.
It was a mutual shaping and empowering, which I appreciated. But I didn't go to pay to see Chris Pine. I wanted to see Wonder Woman do all this stuff, but there was something about that journey together, I think, that they portrayed. I mean, yes, there's baby steps. I would love to see her and Etta or any other female as well. I'm so sad about Robin Wright. I was like, oh no, she died in the first 10 minutes. I love Robin Wright.
She's incredible.
Oh, she was so good.
And she's 50.
Is she really?
Oh.
My word. I was like, oh no, she's gone so quickly.
So let's mention the beach scene then, because that was epic.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
The very first battle scene on the beach with all women kicking butt, and the I guess it was like wire work they did, you know, where they would like spin off the horses and shoot the arrows.
Pretty awesome.
Incredible.
It was emotional though.
So well done. Yeah.
I felt it was emotional because, you know, you think about the culture at the time, and they've been preparing for this their whole lifetime, right?
Oh, the Amazonian.
The Amazonian women.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they just all get, you know.
They all slaughtered.
All these bullets. But it was an emotional scene.
Well, they come back really quickly, though.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I think in the grand scheme of casualties, they lost far fewer than the
Germans. You're right, actually. It was more of the German soldiers.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, but they had to build in that there is, like, man's world is a genuine threat to us, you know? Mm-hmm. So there had to be some bloodshed. And, of course, the ultimate being Robin Wright's character's bloodshed.
I loved her character. Yeah. I just loved it because at the beginning of the movie, I saw this tension between Robin Wright's character and what's the queen's name?
Wait a second. Hippolyta.
Hippolyta. Yeah. So when we think about the challenges in life, we think about, you know, all of these issues that this culture is championing. I think to myself, okay, you know, we're taking a look at two characters here. One is leaning into it and saying, hey, let's lean into it. Let's be empowered. And then the other one is the queen is holding back and almost being fear-based. Mm. Mm. And she's not ready yet. She'll never be ready. She won't need it. But yet you have Robin Wright's character saying, she's ready. She's showing us she's ready. So there's more of a solution-based, you know, character there. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that. I thought, she had sort of a short time on screen, mm-hmm. but profound. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, I think there's the level of, you know, classic screenwriting, you need conflict. Yes. So, you know, having your characters, the queen and her sister, represent conflict. One wants her to stay, one wants her to go. And then there's also looking at it through the gaze of feminism, right? And you've got women who would like things to just stay the way they are, and they're happy to be where they are, and there are the women who want to push through, break through, stand for progress. And both work as symbols mm-hmm. in the film, and that it's you can choose to stay on
Themyscira.
Themyscira. Or choose to leave. And either way, you'll still be a woman. You'll still be okay.
Yeah, and I love that. So I like that scene in the woods mm-hmm. where they kind of, you know, are head-to-head and they have to seek a solution to this diversity of perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what we need to see more of in this day and age is, okay, well, you know what? It might seem you have a polarity, I have a polarity, but can we exist together? Right. And I actually think that's the healthiest way of going at it. Let's find a solution in the middle while keeping our identity. Mm. And I love that scene. So they were quite solution-based in the end, so I thought it was great.
Do you think that Diana is a role model? And what does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. She's a role model. I mean, Marston was a psychologist. He also was involved and a big supporter of the feminist movement. Mm. So he intentionally wrote Wonder Woman to be something bigger than just, you know, a little story of a super power, a superhero. She's a representation of what he thought femininity and females in society could aspire to be, or that they already were inside. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then Marston died shortly after, I think, Wonder Woman went to print, which was a shame because then she went through the hands of many different writers who didn't quite align with his progressive view of feminism. And then you saw, you know, cartoons or TV series in the 70s where she was kind of meek and she was just actually a secretary. Like they had the audacity to write her back down to just being a secretary who happened to know Kung Fu. And then what's her name? Linda Carter series kind of brought things back. They were moving in the right direction. I absolutely think she's a wonderful role model that, I mean, I'm a woman, and if I had a daughter, I wouldn't have any problem with my daughter looking up to Wonder Woman as a role model. I mean, again, she stands for justice, peace, wisdom, and love. Yes, she can kick butt. She'd rather not. It's all her violence is always out of necessity. Yeah, I mean, it's a heavy mantle to carry to be a role model, but I see no problem with Wonder Woman being one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I loved her character, too. I saw clarity in her character. She really knew what her mission was in life. And having a daughter who's 19 years old now, I remember when she was a little girl, and I always wondered, how will I get her ready for this world? And so, yeah, I really had to be very intentional about how I was raising her. I wanted her to be authentic to herself, so I wanted her to be strong. So when I take a look at Diana Prince as a role model, yes, of course, definitely. I see clarity of what her mission is. She was so clear in it that she decided to launch, and she brought some people with her. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Another part of her that I really liked as a role model was her resilience. There were times where she fell, you know, and she wasn't sure. She was unsure of herself. Also, going into a culture that she wasn't aware of existed even, she still had resilience in that role of hers that she chose to go into. She had grit, and she was also authentic. So that's how I raised my daughter. She's 19 years old. I think that she has clarity of her mission and what she wants in life. She has her authenticity. She has that sweetness about her, and she loves people, and she'll champion any underdog. So, yes, definitely. The resilience and grit is primary here. It's almost, we need to kind of profile the resilience and grit in this character because women need it. Young girls need it. They really do.
I agree. Yeah. Like, Wonder Woman has this wonderful humanity to her.
Yeah.
I disagree. I don't think she doubted herself for a second in the movie. I think that that was consistent, that she did not ever doubt herself, even when everyone around her was like, no, you're crazy, you know? You're going to fail. You're going to lose. We're going to die. This is too much. You can't do this. That she never once thought, oh, boy, maybe I can't. She just kept pushing forward.
She did. She did. But did you not kind of feel like she had this big question mark when she first started fighting with Ares? Because she was trying to figure out how strong he was. They were both kind of, you know, sizing each other up.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of, you know, she fell on the ground many times. And I kind of felt like, okay, it was such a vulnerable moment. I felt like there was a little bit of a question mark. Can I do this? So I don't know. I looked at it as an authentic moment where, can I do this? She's on the ground.
Right.
And I don't think it's bad if there was a question mark, because I want my daughter to know that there's question marks.
Right.
And I want
there's
to have
room
grit.
To.
I want you to get back up.
Right. Of course.
I think there's some interesting questions there. I think too, there's almost the opposite moment too, where in that same battle after Steve's plane explodes, which, you know, knowing superhero films, we didn't actually see him die. We just saw the plane explode, so who knows what happened. But let's be serious. There had to be a parachute on there somewhere. But anyway,
I know, I was thinking about that.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But it was interesting though. After that moment, she snaps. If you notice, there's this, because she actually... She finds the strength, but I think she almost loses sight of who she is, because there's that moment, too, where Dr. Poison is on the ground, and she's going to throw a tank on her, and you see, and Ares is saying, good. It's like, you know...
All that, the last 15 minutes were drivel. They were blockbuster drivel.
You watched it out of the movie, didn't you?
The first half of the movie, I loved every minute of it. The second half was a little bit like,
here comes the superhero tropes. Yeah.
And, you know,
it's true.
Yeah, you got to save the world, and explosions are going off every 2 minutes. I do think that Steve died because Chris Pine is too busy making other things. But, you know,
never know, Amanda.
I guess.
If he survives, we'll have to come back.
It's Steve Trevor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Steve Trevor.
We should take bets now. Everybody take bets.
I don't know.
I feel like the wisest actors in Hollywood now are just getting in, getting out. Don't and be part of, like, number five, number six sequel. Like, just make your appearance, do a great job,
and get out.
Out you go.
That's fair. Oh, I actually would prefer if he was dead, because I think it adds more to the weight of her story, the next chapter of her story, if he is. But he has his gun, he smiles, and then you see a plane explode. I don't know what.
Well, and that was him making an act of war based on love. You know, that he wanted to save the world, basically, at the cost of his own life, which, well, I guess men have done that before. Yeah, for sure. Like, martyrdom. Yes. Okay.
Happens in war movies a lot. Actually, this sort of felt like, in many ways, it felt like a war film, other than not the fact that just that it takes place during the war, but it had sort of that feel. But there's something more to it.
Yeah.
I loved how they launched the movie, though. As an origin, right?
Oh, like with her,
that time.
Yeah,
timeline.
Origin stories are fun. They're my favorite of superhero genre, because they tend to have less fighting and more interesting plot-driven aspects, and you get a lot of comedy in it because they are a fish out of water, or you see how things began for them. I mean, I remember when I saw Indiana Jones, the third one, in The Last
Crusade,
and they spent the first 10 minutes with River Phoenix as young Indiana, and I was just like, this is amazing!
Yeah.
That that's why he got the scar. That's why he hates snakes. I thought that was so fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up something about Trevor martyring himself because an act of love. Mm-hmm. And Diana says she believes in love. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, what do you think that means to her? I mean, what do you think that means to her in the context of the story? Because I don't think the word is spoken before that final battle. I don't recall that, other than I'm trying to think of even time on Themyscira. You know, I'm sure
it was. Her mother is a representation of love, right? Like that's her mother doesn't want her to leave because she wants to love and protect her, which is something that every woman who becomes a mother can identify with, you know? And her mother says on the night that she leaves with Steve Trevor, "You have been my greatest love."
Right.
And it's a different version of love that we're not used to seeing as much on screen, you know, familial love. And that's something that, we're speaking in general terms, women have a better handle on is love, not lust, not seeing sexy girls on screen that represent, you know, who the guy is sleeping with or dating, but love.
Yeah.
Pure, beautiful, graceful love.
And that's who she is, right? She's just so, I don't know, not pure, right? And so the love factor for me was when Steve Trevor said, no, we've got to go out there and fight evil. And right, she said, no, that's for sure. That's the big picture. But what about these people?
Yeah.
Right. And she championed not just the mission, but the value of love for individuals. Right. And so she put her head out or her neck out for that. And I thought that was a really great representation of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Usually on screen, we see romance or lust.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to see that representation of familial love and also people love.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I keep looking at everything through the female gaze and the sort of feminist prism. And maybe they meant to do this, maybe they didn't. But I feel like I grew up being schooled by male authority figures, teachers, coaches, father, who would say lovingly to me, like, "You're hooked on the little details, Amanda," or "don't let that bother you so much," or "you have to just suck it up and think about the bigger picture." Again, generally speaking, men will look at big picture, women will get stuck on the smaller details. And one is not better than the other,
you're right.
I don't believe.
No.
And war is a classic example, I think, where you've got the generals who are calculating how many soldiers' bodies do I need to sacrifice in order to inch forward on the battlefield. And that's a terrible thing to have to plot out, but they're thinking about, because I want to win the bigger picture here. And now you have Wonder Woman representing this sort of general female sensibility, which is, well, I get that you want to win the great battle, but you haven't stopped to look at this child bleeding on the ground.
Right.
And if you stopped and looked at them and really saw them, took them in, maybe we wouldn't be fighting at all.
Love that. Love that scene. I think it's a fair representation of what the cultural landscape is looking like more so these days, because they want a diversity of perspectives.
Mm.
And I have heard, you know, to have a man and a woman work together on a huge project lends itself to such great diversity that there's more strength in the solution.
Mm.
And I think that goes for championing, you know, all other injustices. We need to bring it all together. So that scene was real important to me for that. We need that diversity and representation.
Oh, yeah.
I think that everything you guys have said have actually convinced me of the latter rather than the former, but I had two ways that I saw that scene. Mm-hmm. One, because in Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, Superman gives his life for Lois Lane. He says, "You are my world now," and he sacrifices his life. My fear was that was what Wonder Woman was doing, because it was after Steve Trevor's death.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But my hope, and you guys have totally convinced me that that is where they were going with the film, mm. was the understanding of love was actually rooted in sacrifice meaning something on the larger scale for humanity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we humanity. See that definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think Wonder Woman, when she's arguing with Ares, and even Steve Trevor, there was this undeniable hope that things are bad, but they will end. And things can be better than they are. Mm-hmm. Whereas even Steve Trevor has sort of acquiesced to this idea of this is just the way life is, mm-hmm. you know, move on. And there is this belief that love can accomplish that or make some waves in regards to that, I think is true.
And why not have a dash of optimism in these dark, yeah. you know, cynical times? And mm-hmm. comic books came up during, I think, like, they started to really get popular around World War II. That was a mm-hmm. tough mm-hmm. time in the world. And then, you know, there was the Vietnam War and there was the threat of communism. And comic books were like these pulpy, quick, colorful splashes of heroism. And granted, there tended to be an emphasis on individuality, which I think is also culturally very North sure. American and American. But then they banded together and had like mm-hmm. Justice League or... what are they called?
The Avengers.
The Avengers, thank you. How could I forget? Comic books are a bite-sized representation of there's good in the world and there's evil. And sometimes it feels like evil is just taking over, mm-hmm. whether it be, you know, the American political administration right now in 2017, so we all know who I'm talking about. Or, yep. you know, or...
Obama's gone. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't yeah. know who you...
and you can feel, I think as an individual, you can feel like you have no real power, so what's the point?
Right.
Why?
Right.
There's no way of turning this around. The world is just headed for a complete anarchy and selfishness, but that we do want to believe, and it is important that we keep believing in love, in acts of greatness and kindness. Mm-hmm. We have to, and hopefully that will prevail. Mm-hmm. It's why we love Superman, why we love yeah. Wonder Woman. That's why, like, how they still... My son, when he was born, I was like, okay, here we go. I'm going to raise the perfect child. You know? it's not
going
to be...
How's that going?
Yeah. Tell us how.
How's that going?
5 years later. Yeah, right. But I was like, I'm not going to influence his gender. I'm not going to influence his gender. I'm not going to make him materialistic, yada, yada, yada. And I swear we hadn't played a single superhero song, movie, book, anything. And it was like in his molecular structure yes. that he went, who is Superman? I must know of this Superman. And
who is the Superman?
Like, how is this happening? But there's a natural yeah. curiosity, and they're drawn to it. And now I'm so excited that a daughter, you know, a baby girl can also not just look at a Superman, but can see a Wonder Woman symbol too.
I love this movie, really love this movie. I think it's reflective of where we're going as a society. And I think that we're leaning on each other a lot more. I think there's so much going on in this world that is, in my opinion, evil and hard and gut-wrenching. Who wants to go to England anymore in Paris? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we're all coming together. And I see a lot of the great companies like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, they're all coming together in such unique ways and in different spaces that we're unfamiliar with. And creating solutions together. So that movie was that for me. You know, you see the EQ and IQ coming together in this movie. You see the big picture and you see the details coming together in this movie. You see the multiple views, the different cultures, the male, female, all coming together. They were all little, not sound bites, but visual bites that you saw coming together. And that really made me happy. Mm-hmm. Because I feel as though we're on to something here, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys have both drawn on the idea of evil, and that is a huge theme in this particular film. I was just wondering, what do you think it had to say about the nature of evil and responsibility? Do you agree with the film? Do you disagree? What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a big topic, the issue of evil, for sure, because some people have a relative view on evil, you know. But it's as simple as your own child being bullied at school. Mm. Our daughter had that issue when she was younger, and it was heartbreaking. But in response to that question, I feel as though Diana and the small village scene really represented her response to what she saw was not jiving well with herself, and it was evil. Mm. And so she didn't just see what was going on, she responded to it. And so when I think of our responsibility, I feel like we each have that small, still voice, and we need to respond to injustice. Whatever that injustice is, we need to raise our kids that way, to be responders, not just to sit back. And then, you know, the fear-based versus solution-based, you know, thinking when it comes to evil. I would rather lean into it. I'm not someone that will run away from it. It's super hard. But I'd rather be solution-based because I feel more empowered when I do that. In most cases, when I see evil or something that I'm super uncomfortable with that isn't right, I really do want to run away. That actually is my humanness, but I've trained myself to lean into it. So that's my thoughts on that.
I think in this film, evil is manifested in Aries because, you know, we're posing that age-old question, how can such atrocities happen in the world, you know? And war, of course, is a major symbol of atrocities happening. And also, Wonder Woman exists in this, like, she's rooted in mythologies, like Zeus and gods and goddesses. So you need a strong archetypal figure to be her nemesis. She represents good, so naturally she'll be battling evil. I personally don't like looking at things in such grand mystical levels because I think that as humans, that makes us a little lazy. Not lazy, but we disassociate and go, well, I think that person did that terrible thing because they're evil.
Right.
Well, right. I think that that means you just kind of threw up your hands and said, what can I do about that? They were born evil, or they had the evil inside of them.
Right.
Well, no, let's probably take a look at their childhood, you know, were they neglected or, but that's a whole other can of worms. I think for the movie, it was fine. It was like, you got to give Wonder Woman something huge to battle against.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's fine. And that typically is like the big, huge blockbuster epic stuff like that. They're not in it for the realism, you know?
It's well, it's deeply rooted in mythology, like you said. There's a heavy sense of that.
And, yeah.
One of the things I really liked, it's hard to say liked when you talk about evil, but I thought it was a really interesting balance that they portrayed, because where they could have easily gone is just made, just said that, like you said, made it a blanket thing. Like, you know, Ares made this happen. He's the bad guy. He's doing everything. But I think what I actually really liked about the film, and of course I connect with that sort of mythology too as a pastor, you know, wrestle with this idea of the spiritual influences. But I like the idea of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, ultimately,
Steve voiced that.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve really voices that.
You were talking about
that
earlier when he has that argument with her on top of the tower.
Yeah.
That he is kind of the voice of everyone going like, yeah, maybe it's Aries, but maybe it's me too.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
and that's an important voice to have, where it's like, yeah, these things are happening. Okay, so now I'm talking about us in the context of global issues in our world right now. And a lot of what happens somewhere else. You know, it happens in the Middle East. It happens in Africa. And we go, well, that's too bad for them. I feel really bad for them. But that really doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, actually, let's look at where we spend our money, where we shop, where we buy our fuel, you know. And so having accountability is that's not something you can really, I think, work too much into a superhero film.
No, I know. No.
But why? Like, it's great. It's a step to have an actor, a character have at least that line.
And not only a character, a heroic character.
Right. Uh-huh.
If you had had Dr. Poison say, right, this is all, you know, it wasn't just him, it was me.
Yeah.
Well, okay, then you just got a conspiracy that you're going
around.
But what you have is somebody who is a good guy, one of the lead characters, not the center, but a lead character, taking accountability for a war that he fight it, that he would prefer was not there. He does, he's not, you know, excited about the war. He hates the war, but he owns it. You know, it's, and it's really easy. And say, like, you look at, well, for crying out loud, going back to Last Crusade, one of my favorite lines is Indiana Jones saying, "Nazis, I hate these guys."
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, all the Nazis, there's the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But I love this idea that even though you had the heroic character, there is some ownership, some accountability for their decisions and even the evils of the world. You know, I think of, well, this is, like I said, as a pastor, one of the questions I get asked all the time is, how can things like Manchester happen? How do those things happen?
Yeah.
And, you know, why would God make that happen? What about accountability? What about what about the fact that, you know, someone like Manchester, which I think, to be honest, I don't want to make it all about that, but that one really, really bothered me more than most of the other terrorist attacks because it was so random and targeted the wrong,
such
like,
a vulnerable
such a vulnerable group. I said, I was talking to someone, I said, when you go to war, like, you have the war, like we saw in this film, you have two sides that have shaken hands and agreed that they're going to beat the snot out of each other into submission. And here you had, now it's just so random, and you have this vulnerable group that's just taken on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how do you account for evil? But if you just put it on the other,
yes,
and
I
say
know,
it's
Steve.
Not me,
I know.
I'm okay.
So guys, what about that scene where Wonder Woman was about to throw, what was it?
On it was a tank,
a
on,
tank.
Doctor, on Dr.
Okay.
Poison.
Right. On Dr. Poison. Mm-hmm. Do you know how I felt during that scene? I thought, that's me. I'm Dr. Poison.
Oh, you were Dr. Poison.
I'm Dr. Poison. Because if you really looked at Dr. Poison's eyes, there was that vulnerability, like,
I was
I
just
don't
doing
know
my
what
job.
I was just doing my job, or I don't know how I got into this.
Right.
But there was that vulnerability of, I shouldn't have done this, or, you know, but I felt like Dr. Poison was me. That could be us. You know, really think of it, really made me think, okay, in those situations where, you know, you have that tension of choosing to do the right thing with another individual, you take a look at yourself and say, okay, am I Dr. Poison in this situation? And it's so real that we need to take responsibility that, you know, some of this, the stuff could really have been done by me. And I don't know, I just enjoyed that scene because it was a check yourself scene. Like, would you want that compassion from Wonder Woman not to throw that tank on you?
Well, that's one of the things, you know, when we talk about that scene before, that was, you know, she sort of snaps and the aggressiveness goes crazy. But there is sort of this, who am I going to be moment.
Yes.
And yes, you're right. The whole thing needs goes nuclear because that happens in all DC and Marvel things. It happens all the time. All goes nuclear in like that last act, you can go like that. But that moment is interesting because there is this sort of, who will I be? Am I going to be as destructive as Ares in this moment? Even though, quote unquote, Dr. Poison, quote, deserves it because she is the bad guy, right?
Yeah.
That's why I thought it was such an interesting moment.
Interesting moment, because I went from being Wonder Woman to Dr. Poison, back to Wonder Woman, and I thought, which, you know, what would I do in that situation? And
I was Steve Trevor the whole time, and I blew up.
Yeah, and you jumped out in your parachute.
In my parachute.
For sure.
Sorry,
we didn't know that there was this door, this special door with a
trap door.
You know, right in the front where he was. I kind of feel like, I hope he comes back, Amanda.
We're taking bets. I hold fast in the no camp.
Yeah.
It's not about
realistically.
Hope.
Realistically, I don't think he will, but I want him to. It'd be nice.
So as an actor, I was very excited and had a visceral reaction to the battle scenes, the action scenes, because there have been female actors who've done amazing stunts. You know, we saw Carrie Moss in
Carrie Ann Moss in The Matrix. Of course, The Matrix films. Yes.
And we've talked about Angelina in Tomb Raider. But to get to see a whole bunch of women, you know, all the Amazonians, and then Robin Wright being an older woman. I hate to say an older woman because it shouldn't matter, but it does. So I was so excited by the action sequences. I thought they were all done so well.
Yeah.
Completely gripping. And I've actually noticed on my social media feed the last few days that there have been quite a lot of emotional reactions to the fight scenes. Women, like I saw a headline, a byline for New York Times review where she said, "Why I cried when I watched the action scenes in Wonder Woman." And I think that it's not to be discounted that we have waited so long for our chance to see women's bodies moving in such a cool, powerful way on the screen. And I mean, just as powerfully as any other male superhero you'd see on the screen. Like, she kicks butt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was interesting. We just, a couple weeks ago, we had an interview with Eamon Joseph, who was in Baywatch. And it was interesting because one of his key scenes is a fight scene.
Mm.
And one of the things he said is that every fight scene needs to tell its own story. And that was actually really sort of eye-opening for me because, you know, when you think about the fight scene, you think of it as a necessary evil, if you will. And for the record, I'm sick of superhero films too. But
maybe that'll be another podcast.
Sick of superhero films?
Yeah. Like,
so many
why?
People disagree with me. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's so true.
Disagree? I know.
Anyway, we don't need 12 a year. but you see, especially in a film like this, every one of those battles tells its own distinct story.
Sure.
There's the scene on the beach. There's No Man's Land, which in and of itself could have just been a short film. In many ways, that scene in the trenches in No Man's Land.
Oh, yeah, it was epic.
It was so great. That was the highlight of the film.
Yeah.
And then you've got this final battle, which goes way over the top because they often do.
Yeah.
But takes more of a philosophical bend than the other ones do. So each battle sequence does tell its own story. So
That's true. That's a good point. And that, again, is why I love origin stories, because nothing seems to be gratuitous. I know that's a bit contradictory to the fact that I'm sick of superhero films. And I think that the whole thing is kind of gratuitous. But no, that's very true. That's a good point. And okay, so if I'm going to really get technical and a little bit
critical. Do your thing. Go.
There were a couple moments in the battle scene, the No Man's Land battle was one of them, where I was enjoying myself so much and I knew it was coming. I knew. You knew when she was down in the trenches arguing with Steve, it was coming. She's going for it. And we've waited long enough. Like, we've waited one half of the movie to see her do her thing, right? In Man's World.
Yeah.
That I thought Patty, she just went a little touch hammy. Took her time a little too much. Like, the fan is going on Gal's hair.
As she's coming up the ladder, is that what you mean?
Yeah. She's coming up the ladder, and she's got a grin on her face. And, like, we get it. It almost would have been slightly more powerful if you had just dialed back the righteousness. Like, we know how powerful this moment is, so we're going to take our time. But then again, who am I talking to? I'm talking to DC. Like, they're all about the grand epic. Like, my cape is flapping for 5 minutes.
I was going to say, it's a very DC moment.
Absolutely. But if look, we can't just have every minute of this podcast be like, it was great, it was lovely, it was wonderful. It's like, if there is a chance at one day merging thoughtful, artful cinema with the blockbuster, I would just like to have added my 2 cents that No Man's Land could have been dialed back just one notch at the beginning, and it still would have been as poignant. Because sometimes what I think is most impactful as an audience member is that you're halfway through, a significant aspect of a film, like a scene, and because the director has chosen not to treat it with such a heavy hand, that's when you go, oh man, that's been a woman the whole time doing that. Hadn't even thought about it for a few minutes because they weren't trying to beat it over my head.
Yeah.
And Patty has said in interviews, I don't want to be a female director. I want to be a director.
Director.
And I don't want to make a female superhero film. I want to make a superhero film. So great, Patty. Awesome. I agree with you. So moving forward, let's just stop patting ourselves on the back quite so much and just make the movie.
Yeah.
And if you happen to make it really good too, and tighten up plots. Like, how many superhero, how many summer after summer after summer can we have where the reaction is, it was great, good effects, didn't, the story kind of went over here and over there. Like, how many of those do you need to hear before the producers and writers sit down and go, maybe we should tighten up the plot a bit. Maybe that would be incredible. Like, somebody call up Chris Nolan and just say, dude, what did you do with The Dark Knight? And can I just have a coffee with you? Like, tighten that up, people.
But I have a question for you, because earlier we talked about equality, equity. And you said maybe we need the equality moments in order to have equity.
Right.
And I kind of feel like we needed that. You know,
well, fair enough. Propaganda.
That moment. Yeah. Right? Because I'm all about those moments. I'm like, yeah, there she is, girlfriend.
Yeah, you want it to breathe. Okay, fair enough.
I'm fine with that. But I completely understand the landscape that you're looking for. But I wonder if we needed that moment for the future. I wonder if we need several of those moments in other movies in order to launch into equity for the future. I don't know.
I think it'll be very interesting. Actually, it may not even be affected by it, but Justice League comes out in November.
Right.
Which has four male superheroes and Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman is the part that everybody's excited about. Cool. Even at Batman versus Superman, nobody was talking about Batman or Superman when that movie came out. Because the Wonder Woman piece was the strongest part of the whole film.
Yeah, so hopefully this tips the scales.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't think we can go back. I hope I'm not just sitting in a seat of naivety that we've tipped the scales.
I would like to see that happen. And you heard about the controversy about this film last week, about the female screening. Did you hear about this?
Yeah. In the U.S., right?
It was so ridiculous. And all the male fanboys got up and they were up in arms that I was like, who cares? It's one screening in a theater and they decided it's Wonder Woman, let's have a female screening. And people... But it's like all the trolls came out, all the internet trolls, and that became this big thing. It should be, I don't see what the even issue was at the point, but.
What do you think of that, Amanda? Because I have my perspective on it, but I want to hear your perspective on that.
On the reaction or having the screening?
The reaction and the screening, both. Right. Yeah.
The screening, I get it. I listened to one news report and they interviewed, I think, the organizers, and I get it. I get that women want a safe space to watch this movie and not have any male energy. That's not something I really agree with, but that's fine. Go for it.
That was fine to do.
Yeah, exactly. The reaction. Okay. It's always going to be this way. There's always going to be people who see one stance and oppose it. Mm. And it's almost like they were just born to be in opposition to people. And it's like, really? Does it really matter? But also, this is the unfortunate conundrum with feminism, is you can be a feminist, you can believe in rights for women, you push, 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 and then all of a sudden, whoops, we went too far, and men are like, that was too much. That you asked for too much or you went too far. And there are actions that feminists can take sometimes that I unfortunately feel they go to the extreme and they give voice to opposition. It's unfortunate because feminism I believe in, and I believe that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, and everyone should be a feminist. But sometimes things can be construed as an extreme, and therefore they will always get an extreme opposite reaction to them.
Yeah.
So there are men out there who are threatened, bothered by it. I don't feel they need to be, but it will always exist.
Mm. Yeah, agreed. There's pros and cons to having women screen it on their own. But because of the unique value of this movie, why not give them that space?
Yeah.
I don't think that space was meant to say boys aren't important to us. It's just that we just needed our unique space to do that. And I think it was a celebratory space. But like Amanda said, I think it will always be that way. And I agree. So in response to it's always going to be that way, we have to figure out a healthy response to that, right? And it's always, for me, it's always working together for a solution, working together for a solution. So if one group feels polarized, let's figure that out and let's find a solution. But sometimes unique situations are needed, and I think that's okay.
Yeah, I just thought it was more celebratory than exclusivity.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was just about we've got
this.
A massive female superhero.
Sure.
This is a big deal. So
yeah.
Let's have something special and unique. But it wasn't about excluding people, it was just about celebration and that's what bugged me about it. And I think it breaks my heart to hear that it might always be this way, but I think you're probably right. I think you're
well,
both probably right.
The only analogy I have is when you have a baby shower. Sometimes with baby showers, you have girls only. But then there are other baby showers where you have girls and guys, right?
Yeah.
And the whole shebang, you've got the whole family there, right? Family and friends. So I kind of feel like let's give each other some space when it's unique and there's value in it. It's unfortunate, but again, it's when there is this polarity, I just feel like, okay, it's always about working together and finding a solution. So
I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place for us to transition to. Why don't we do Screen It or Skip It?
Ooh.
Girls, or sorry. Ladies. Can't say girls. No. Ladies.
Just call us Wonder Women.
Wonder Women.
That's what we are.
Excuse me, Steve. You don't see we're Wonder Women today.
Yeah.
I say screen it.
Screen it. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. Well, take your girl squad. Take your guy squad. Screen it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definite screen it. That's one of the things, you know, you look at the other superhero movies, just the ones that DC's put out the last couple of years, and the scripts haven't worked. Like, you know, not even talking about it works because it's Wonder Woman.
I'm going to give you an audible representation of DC's films the last few years. You ready?
Yeah.
There you go. You heard it from Amanda first.
It's a good thing this wasn't
TV. You heard it from her first.
Anyway, as you were saying.
You know, I can't top that. That sums it up.
Yeah.
And there have been some that I've even kind of liked, but it's they to say that they had good scripts would be stretching it. Unbelievable. This one just, it brought everything together. And I mean, there's all these other aspects that we've talked about that make it something unique and special, I think. But just as a movie, just as a superhero film, it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good film, which has been hard to say, especially from those. So definitely screen it for me. Wonder Women.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for
You're
having this conversation.
Welcome,
it's been so great.
I'm flapping my
your cape.
My cape right now. And there's a fan on me.
and one on me as well. And that's weird.
Super weird.
Is there any way that our listeners can connect with you or things you'd like to plug? Amanda, you'd mention.
I'm on Instagram as Hey Amanda Jane. And I am an actor, so I have a show coming up at the Fringe Festival in Toronto in July, July 7th to 15th. And my two-hander play is called The Atomic Tradition.
Nice.
And it's with another female, so lots of girl power happening.
Wonderful.
Will it pass the Bechdel test?
It sure will. Yeah, it absolutely will.
Wonderful. You can follow me on Hey Jude 777. Just follow me. Follow for a follow.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Got it.
On Twitter?
No, that's Insta.
Oh, that's Instagram.
Instagram.
Oh, she's on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Jude is the Instagram queen.
Ooh, okay.
She is the...
I guess so. I try hard.
Yeah, that's true.
I try hard, you know.
and as always, you can find the podcast on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Podomatic, and Stitcher. Of course, you can also find us on the website. If you go to the website screenfish.net and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which is questions that you can have with the people when you do go see Wonder Woman, because you're going to go see Wonder Woman. Have these questions and have the conversation as well with the people that you see it with. The podcast will return in 2 weeks, where we'll be talking about a very similar film, Cars 3.
Nice. Oh,
it's on the schedule.
Deep.
But as well, you can also look for our interviews over the course of that, between those times, with author Josh Larson, who wrote his book Movies Are Prayers, and actor Graham McTavish from the TV series Preacher. Again, ladies, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been really wonderful to chat with you.
Yeah,
really
thanks great. For having me. Thanks.
You're very welcome, Steve. Good to be here.
And as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.